You are probably tired of watching videos on the Facebook outage, but this outage is fantastic. We have learned a lot of lessons from this outage. It's not by any means boring, because first of all, when I first reported on this in the first hour, we all thought it's the DNS server went down, or their DNS records are not getting propagated properly. But no, the outage lasted for 6 hours. I finished work and I was looking at Twitter. I tried and Facebook was still down. So I was really surprised. This is massive. And by massive, I mean it is catastrophic. But Facebook published a detailed analysis of what exactly happened. And in this video, I'd like to go and read and then commentate on what might have happened, why it happened, and give you my take on certain things. And we have learned so many things. And I personally, there's a lot of concept that's spiked my curiosity to learn more. And in the future, maybe I'll make some more videos as I document my curiosity, because all the videos that you see here, I'm not really teaching you anything. I'm not really just finding something really interesting and just documenting myself finding it interesting. Does that make sense? That's all what I do on this channel. How about we jump into the article and read it? Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. With that said, let's get on the show. All right, I'm going to reference the article for you below in the show notes if you're interested. The article stated, more details about the October 4th outage. Now that our platforms are up and running as usual after yesterday's outage, I thought it would be worth sharing a little more details on what happened and why, and most importantly, how. We're learning from it. Who is this? Who's reading? We're reading from Santosh Janardhan. I believe he's the CTO of the infrastructure. Who are you, my friend? He's the VP, Vice President of Infrastructure in Facebook. This outage was triggered by the system that manages our global backbone network capacity. The backbone is the network Facebook has built to connect all our computing facilities together. This outage was triggered by the system that manages our global backbone network capacity. The backbone is the network Facebook has built to connect all our computing facilities together, which consists of tens of thousands of miles of fiber optics cabled crossing the globe and linking all our data centers together. Because this might be... You might see this and say, duh, of course. But to me, that's not the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear about backbone, right? And it makes perfect sense. So if you have a data center, for example, in the east of the US, like Miami, and there's another data center in California, right? How would you talk between these two data centers? For example, if you have replicas in databases, and there's one replica in California and another replica on Miami, and they want to sync the changes, right? Whether two-way or one-way. How do you do that? There must be some connection between them. You can decide to go through the internet, right? So the packets will be routed through the publicly available routers, but that incurs some latency, obviously. Right? So the optimal way is really to have dedicated connection, and all better if it's a fiber connection, then you lay down this fiber connection between your data centers in the West and the East, and now you have a dedicated connection. So you have lower latency, you have this full bandwidth just for yourself. You're not restricted by the internet, effectively. You don't have strict rules when it comes to congestion control. So if TCP or QUIC, right? Which Facebook, by the way, their backend all is in QUIC. They moved everything last year, I believe, to QUIC, even internally in the backend. So now congestion control, you have the upper limit because now you have a dedicated thing. Now, what I'm not sure of is whether Facebook actually own these fiber optic cables or not, or they are just renting them from another company. I literally know very, very, very little about this stuff when it comes to fibers and when it comes to manufacturing of these fibers. And okay, now we established that Facebook has their internal network. I know they call it a global backbone, but to us, it's really an internal, almost like a LAN network that, I don't know if it has a private IP address, but that's what I think. It would think like a massive network that is almost internal, right? There are public access to it, so there are some data centers will have a public presence where some servers will have a public IP address interface and an internal IP address where everything will be communicated internally. Now, this is what we have established. We know it's a beautiful big network that is global everywhere in the world, and this is back of the backbone. They are connected through fiber. There are some places in the data center where you have public presence or the public IP address where you can access them from all over the world effectively, and then once you're in, everything is internal and everything is high speed in the Facebook network. That's what we know now. Those data centers come in different forms. Some are massive buildings that house millions of machines that store data and run heavy computational load, which makes sense. I would imagine like millions of machines, really? I didn't really know that it's in the millions. Well, so yeah. Facebook load, Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. So millions of machines. Some data centers have millions of machines, technically, right? And running these computational that keep our platform running. You know, the backend and how much work the backend needs if you want to run asynchronous jobs. So yeah, computational, heavy, strong then. And others are smaller facilities that connect our backbone network to the broader internet and the people using our platform. So these smaller facilities are also connected to places. They're connected to the data centers internally, and they have public presence where they have a public IP address, where the public internet, right, the routers and the internet can route traffic to that. And once the packets are in the small facilities, they are effectively inside the huge bandwidth network on the back end. All right, so we know this is very critical to understand now. When you open up one of our apps and load up your feed or messages, the app's request for data travels from your device to the nearest facility. So how does it find the nearest facility? So this is a very good question. This is where GeoDNS comes into the question, I believe, where it will serve you an IP address that is closest to you. And I don't know much about this, of the technicality of this, but there must be some sort of a geolocation between the source IP address that is requesting this DNS entry. The DNS server will see, okay, you are here, right? You are in this location, gives you some sort of an idea. I have these sorts of IP addresses. I have a lot, obviously. The DNS server will, the Facebook.com will resolve to not one IP address, many, many IP addresses, but this is the closest to you. So all these things, that's how I think it will work. Does it mean, is this how exactly it works? I'm not sure. Another good research. And if anyone knows, let me know in the comment section. Which then communicates directly over our backbone network to the data, larger data center. So once you are in, right? So this is the shortest path. Where are you? You are in Singapore. Okay, I'm gonna serve you an IP address that is maybe in Singapore, okay? And then once you're in Singapore, the data may be in California. I doubt, right? Maybe there is a replica somewhere there, even in Singapore. But once you're in, that's it. You're in the high-speed network. So now, even in the high-speed network, you still want the closest data center to you, right? So that's once you are in this high-speed local network of Facebook. I keep calling it non-network and local, and I keep calling it local, and I know people will yell at me, but to me, I that's how I think about it. It's a local network of Facebook, right? It's an internal network. Yeah, it is global, but to us, from looking from outside the internet, it is a local thing, an internal thing, right? So this is good architecture. So it's not, we love it. That's where the information needed by your app gets retrieved and processed. Okay. And sent back over the network to your phone. Okay. So once it's processed, get back the request, and then you get served. This is a classic architecture. Get served by the closest server, right? The data traffic between all these computing facilities is managed by routers, which figure out where to send all the incoming and outgoing data. All right, so these computing facilities, these high-speed computing facilities, obviously there is some sort of a router that connects this facility to another facility, or this data center to that data center. Okay. And the extensive day-to-day work of maintaining this infrastructures, our engineers often need to take part of the backbone offline for maintenance. That makes sense. You need to maintain certain, this fiber link needs to be maintained. We're going to repair a fiber link. So let's reroute the traffic from this. So that means that they have load balancing of their network. So that means they have multiple paths. And I talked about it in my short video here in the global scheme of things. There's not just one path, because if you kill this, there must be a round robin, not round robin, and must be another route that you can take to get to the data center. Right? Perhaps repairing a fiber line, adding more capacity, or updating the software on the router itself. Okay, so they need to take some of the infrastructure down, but usually this doesn't interrupt service, because we have obviously load balancing. We take this data center offline, or we take this server offline. We can route you to somewhere else. This was the source of yesterday's outage, which is October 4th. During one of these routine maintenance jobs, a command was issued with the intention to assess the availability of global backbone capacity. So probably say, okay, what is available? Tell me what is available so that I can route the traffic. Is that why you check the availability of the backbone capacity? Or you say, hey, are you available? You're just asking if the backbone is available. Which unintentionally took down all the connections in our backbone network. Why? I don't understand how a command that assess availability can actually take down the network. Is it just a wrong command? Effectively disconnecting Facebook data centers globally. So this is what happened. The data centers themselves, now all of them are disconnected. Very interesting. Our systems are designed to audit commands like these to prevent mistakes like this. That sounds like a weird English. English is not my first language, but hey. But a bug in that audit tool prevented it from properly stopping that command. So the command to assess the availability of the global network technically took down a network. I don't know how. Something that is read-only technically would take down your network. There's no details on what that command, the mistake was, to be honest. But even though you did that command, now you need some sort of a monitoring to tell you that, hey, you did the wrong command. Let's prevent this mistake from happening. The audit tool that monitors this had a bug in it, and it didn't prevent that command from it getting issued. Yaxi. All right, so what happened now? This command was issued to the router. The router effectively broadcasted this to all the backbone routers in Facebook. Now, every data center is disconnected from the other data center. We have nothing about the internet yet. Let's focus about that. The data centers themselves are disconnected. What does that mean? That means the internal of the network is broken. But remember, there are small facilities and the large facilities that they talked about. The large facilities does the compute, which are literally internal. I don't see why would you need public presence for those. Publicly, the heavy compute databases. You never expose databases to the internet. We learned this the hard way. We've seen all the Elasticsearch and MongoDB leaks, right? You never expose the database publicly to the internet, right? It doesn't have a public IP address. So it is an internal thing hidden behind this big facility, and then you access it through another small facility that is exposed to the internet. And once you're in, you just the routing takes place. But the routing is broken now between these data centers. Let's continue reading. The change caused a complete disconnection of our server connections between our data centers and the internet. The word and the sentence and the internet, I did not understand because, hey, how? They're going to explain in a minute, but we understand how your server connections between the data centers were down because you just mentioned that the fiber maintenance accidentally took all the other fibers in the network, right? The routers. But how are you now disconnected from the internet? They're going to explain it. One of the jobs performed by our smaller facilities is to respond to DNS queries. So the small facilities we talked about, those are the ones that are exposed to the public. They have public presence. They have public IP addresses. And they also have private IP addresses. I don't know what kind of configuration they have, but they have another interface to talk to the back end, to the internal back end, right? To the other data centers. DNS is the address book of the internet, enabling the simple web names we type into the browser to be translated to the specific server IP addresses. We know what DNS is. Those translation queries are answered by the authoritative name servers that occupy well-known IP addresses themselves. The authoritative name servers have IP addresses themselves. This is critical. So another thing I learned about the DNS is that it's not just one thing you ask it and gives you an answer. It's a hierarchy of things. All right. Here's quickly how DNS works. So DNS is designed to be kind of distributed, right? It's not just you ask one thing and it gives you an answer, right? You effectively ask your DNS resolver. This could be your router even, which has some sort of cache. Or it could be a public resolver, such as 1111, which is Cloudflare, or 8888, which is Google's. Them themselves, these resolvers, if they have the cache answer, they will give you the IP address. If they don't, then they connect to one of the 13's root servers. And these are very, very well known. These root servers, you're going to ask them, okay, I have .com, which is I'm asking for the IP address of Facebook.com. I have .com. What is the top level domain IP address of .com, right? So you ask the root server, which are publicly available. They are maintained by many, many organizations, right? These are well known. There are, I believe, 13 of them. Doesn't mean 13 servers. They have 13 well-known root servers, but they have like thousands of servers in the back. So now, you ask the root servers, it's going to tell you the top level domain IP address of the .com. If your site is .org, it will give you the IP address of the top level domain that has all the .com things, right? So now you're going to get back an IP address for the top level domain for .com. Now the resolver itself, which is 1111 or your router, will now take the IP address of the top level domain. Okay, now I know the .com. Give me the facebook.com. Who is the authoritative domain name server that hosts Facebook.com. So there is another recursive call. So now give me the IP, and again, not the IP address of Facebook.com, not yet. Give me the IP address of the DNS authoritative entity that owns Facebook.com that will eventually tell me the IP address of Facebook.com. So now you get that, the authoritative name server. Now that IP address, you connect to it, and by you, I mean the resolver, connect to it, and then ask the question, what is the IP address of Facebook.com? And then the authoritative name server will tell you, oh, it's blah, 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 blah. And that's how you get the IP address. The last step, the authoritative name server, is the Facebook infrastructure themselves. This is very, very critical. Facebook.com, Facebook owns and maintains their authoritative DNS servers. So they are sitting where? In these small facilities. So all the authoritative name servers are in the small facility. So all the authoritative name server of Facebook are in these small facilities. So they have public presence, as we talked about. But guess what? Let's continue reading. Those translation queries are answered by our authoritative name servers. Are eventually answered. That's the correct word, right? Eventually answered by our authoritative name servers. That occupy will known IP addresses themselves, which in turn are advertised to the rest of the internet via another protocol called the BGB. Another thing I need to read more about. So this border gateway protocol, so we said that this authoritative name server, the DNS servers that has the answer for Facebook.com, that has the answer for WhatsApp.com, that has the answer for Instagram.com, right? The answer for the what's the IP address of these domains are living in these small facilities, and these small facilities have a public presence. What does that mean? It means they have public IP addresses. But what does that mean to have a public IP address? We never talk about this stuff. We always assume we know. We don't know anything. A public presence, a public IP address need to know, how do I get to you? And this is the puppy that does that. Border Gateway Protocol. It will tell you how, what path to take through the internet to get to that puppy. You need to get to it. And here's how you can go through this network, you can go through this network, you can go through Singapore, you can go through Russia. It does this. How? Technical details, I'll figure it out one day. But that's how it does. This routing, very critical. It tells you how to get to it. This is the critical part. How to get to it has disappeared. Let's continue. Which in turn are advertised to the rest of the internet via another protocol, Border Gateway Protocol. To ensure reliable connections, our DNS servers disable those BGP advertisements to itself, right? If they themselves cannot speak to our backend data centers. Since this is an indication of an unhealthy network connection. So, these small facilities have these DNS authoritative name servers, and their backend, which is the data centers, right, are in this heavy compute, big million machine data centers, right? They connect to it. There's a small facility connected to the big facility. Guess what? The connection is broken. Okay, no big deal. This connection, the internal connection is broken, right? But no, that's not the end of the story. These DNS servers are smart. They would just say, okay, well, if the connection is not they don't know the connection. They know that, oh, these backends are unreachable. Let me drop this entry. Let me drop this IP address, right? Let me drop this IP address from existence. Doesn't make sense. And not only that, while I'm dropping this, all of the IP addresses I publicly expose, right, are not even reachable. Why even advertise it to the BGP? Let's let the public know that, hey, this is not reachable, bleh, remove the record. This is not reachable, bleh, remove the record. That means every BGP record that you move, the internet just Facebook went dark. That's what happened. The internet cannot find these puppies anymore, right? And if the internet cannot find the name, the authoritative name servers themselves, then the DNS queries cannot be answered. Here's what I didn't understood though. The authoritative name servers have IP addresses themselves, right? Okay, these were reachable and operational, but the mapping to the facebook.com IP address itself, which is another IP address, must be, right? That IP address, is that reachable or not? The facebook.com IP address, is that reachable? That article doesn't answer that. So whether this IP address lives in this small facility or not is to be determined, or does it live in the big facility? That's also something to be known, right? But regardless, but here's another interesting question. So what if I had a cache of facebook.com IP address? Will I be able to connect to that IP address? My guess is probably yes. You can connect to it, but it won't get you too far. That is because once you get to it, it's probably a reverse proxy, which will in turn connect to the back end, which doesn't exist because the fibers are cut, right? So it's very, very interesting thing, because that's exactly what I saw in the first hour of the outage. Facebook.com was not resolving DNS. WhatsApp.com was not resolving, but Instagram one actually was resolving for me an IP address. And I didn't get that. Was that a cache in my whatever resolver I was using at that point? I believe I was a Cloudflare. And if that is the point, I was able to connect. I was able to establish a TCP connection to that IP address. I was able to establish a TLS connection to that IP address. But when I did a curl to give me the page /get/, I got an error from their backend saying no servers are available. That tells me that, yeah, the DNS, the IP address may be reachable, this publicly available IP address will be reachable, but eventually the backend is down. So I believe these DNS servers have smart checks to check not only this local IP address, because it's going to be useless to check this reverse proxy. You need to check also the backend, and they might have even some error checking. So, oh, check for errors. If this is returning an error, remove from the PGB advertisement. Let's continue reading. It's just the whole thing is just I'm really reading through this and just thinking at the same time. In the recent outage, the entire backbone was removed from operation, making these locations, these small facility locations, declare themselves unhealthy and withdraw the BGP advertisement. That means, hey, I no longer exist. Don't even attempt to connect to me, because even if you did try to connect to me, the backend is unavailable. Why is it unavailable? Because someone made a configuration error that took down all our fiber, internal fiber connection, effectively, the communication between data centers, right? So that makes me think, if the data that I'm requesting was in this small facility, I might have been able to be served the homepage, but that's pretty much it, right? Another thing, if those small facility didn't exist, right, and the DNS resolvers lived in those big facilities, then I don't think the outage will exist at all. Because, hear me out, I'm just thinking out loud here. So if these DNS resolvers lived in the big million machine, one of the million machine compute, then they will have a public presence. And then they will try to connect to the backend, which, guess what? It is local. The whole thing is local. We're not going through a fiber network because we are in the data center. If that's the case, then the outage will never happen because, hey, I'm at this point, you're not even going through a fiber connection. You're just, hey, everything is internal, right? Very interesting. I wonder why they did that. Why does the small facility have these DNS resolvers and then they make this jump through the fiber? I'm just thinking this out. I do think that if their DNS resolver lived in the data centers, then they wouldn't have this problem at all. I might be wrong, obviously. But just think about it. Let's continue. The end result that was that our DNS servers became unreachable, even though they were still operational. Yeah, of course, they were operational in a sense that they work, right? Even the backend is operational, if you think about it. Everything is operational. Nothing went down except the network, right? So technically, everything is operational. This made it impossible for the rest of the internet to find our servers, right? Yeah, once you can't find this IP address, then you can't connect to it. Even if you do have an IP address of a small facility reverse proxy that lives there, you would connect to it, but the small facility would need to connect to the big facility, which has all the juice, right? That stuff is dead because you're going through the fiber connection. Yeah, man, I still think the big facility should expose a DNS resolver. But that could be just me. Yeah, keep the small facilities, right, for local access because it's cheaper to. It's easier to build a small facility very localized to small areas, even rural areas, right? So you can get quick access and then pull a fiber. But also, I think they also need a public presence in their data centers, at least just for these DNS servers. Now, we talk about the risk as well. It's like, oh, these data centers are, they should not be exposed to the internet. And that I did mention that in the beginning of this video, really. Yeah, it's a catch time to do. I don't know what I would do. I would expose that, but I would kind of secure that public facility. I think that's probably why they don't do it. They don't expose this juice, right? All the data, all your user data is actually in the big facilities and the computer and everything is there. And they don't want public internet presence there effectively, right? You only go through the fiber channels. And that's probably, we're going to come to that now. Why the outage actually took that long, right? Because there is no public way to connect to that. And again, I'm inferring a lot of things that they never mentioned in the article. I'm inferring it. Maybe someone from Facebook can answer these questions. It's made it possible for the rest of the internet. Okay. As of this happened, are we still recording? Yes. As all of this happened very fast, and as our engineers worked to figure out what was happening and why, they faced two large obstacles. What are they? What are the obstacles? First, it was not possible to access our data centers through our normal means because their networks were down. Well, I did mention that in the second video that I made about this. Well, you cannot remote to stuff because the fiber down, right? The internal thing that connects the data centers together are down. So how would you, first of all, how do you first get all these people, all these employees working from home, right? So they are VPNing and they're using probably software which goes through the internet to VPN. And to get, once you're in that, if you can ever get in, you can't because none of the IP addresses are resolving. The DNS, which I believe the VPN would use, that was down. We know about that. So there's no way to get in. Their network were down. And the second, the total loss of DNS broke many internal tools. That's what I was talking about, the VPN and anything that any internal tool uses must use DNS. And the DNS is down. And if the DNS is down, it cannot answer it. I'm not entirely sure about this because, yeah, the DNS is down from the outside, but if you are a tool running in the back end and use DNS, then the answer would be given to you from the inside, right? That's probably a different DNS resolver. You're not going to do it to the outside public DNS to answer a question about where Facebook.com is because you are in Facebook.com. I might be wrong there. Like when I at work and I do a VPN in a machine at work and I do something dot mycompany.com, this thing immediately resolves to a DNS entry. If I do this from my phone, which is I'm on public internet, that never resolves because it's an internal DNS entry that only at work we have that entry. And I believe Facebook must have something like that. Anyway. Again, another thing that I was missing here. We normally use to investigate and resolve outages like this. Our primary and out-of-bound network access was down. So we sent engineers on site. That's exactly what I predicted. So we sent engineers on site to the data centers to have them debug the issue and restart the system. Yeah, you gotta drive in, whatever the data center, go to Vegas and get into the data center. Crack open these keys and then just do it. Restart the systems. But this took time. I didn't know this. Get this. Listen to this. But this took time because these facilities are designed with high level of physical and security in mind. Guess what? All the data, all the juice is there, right? All the beautiful stuff is in that data center. So that explains why there might not be a public authoritative name server resolver in those because it might expose security flaws and people can get into it right through that. That's why you need physical access. Well, that, hey, we're going to protect this precious gold data, right? Lock it in. So there's a lot of security, mechanisms. They are hard to get into. That's what she said. And once you're inside, okay, Facebook, you're just, all right, you're baiting me here. The hardware and routers are designed to be difficult to modify, even when you have physical access to them. Is this a troll sentence? Because it sounds like one. The hardware and routers are designed to be difficult to modify even when you have physical access to them. Okay, so it's very hard to modify these things. They are locked down because since there is no reason for you to be here to change these. So we're going to put extra level of security for you to change these. So even employees couldn't figure this out. So it took extra time to activate the secure access protocols needed to get people on site and able to work on the servers. Zuck steps in. Only then could we confirm the issue and bring the backbone online. So that took the whole six hours. Maybe it took less than that, but we're going to talk about that. Why once the network is up, you can't expect all your services to be up at the same time. We're going to talk about that now. Once our backbone network connectivity was restored across our data center, everything came back up with it. But the problem was not over. We knew that flipping our services back on, so they did turn them physically off, right, at once could potentially cause a new round of crashes due to surge of traffic. Yeah, you never do this. This is why rolling restarts exist. You never start all of this at the same time. Immediately, you're going to get a surge because this is unexpected, right? There will be a central point of failure where it couldn't handle the surge of traffic. So you get timeouts, and that timeouts will just trigger back down into another, causes other disasters. So in the back end, you always, if you have like a million server, you don't turn them all at the same time, all right? The reverse proxy will die, right? Because of the messaging and all that stuff. then you need to start up one by one and then slowly start all the services back up. Unless you designed your backend in a way to handle the search, right? If you didn't, then you have to adhere by these things. Individual data centers were reporting dips in power. Oh, see, this I didn't know. This is news to me. I don't know anything about electrical engineering. Zero things about electrical engineers. Individual data centers were reporting dips in power usage in the range of tens of megawatts. Okay, so megawatts for some reason. Now I don't know what's the difference. Megawatts versus ampere. My dad is an electrical engineer. He tried to teach me. It goes from this ear to the other ear. I don't understand anything about electrical engineering, to be honest. Maybe one day. And suddenly reversing such a dip in power consumption could put everything in the electrical systems to crash at risk. Really? So if even the electrical network apparently have some limits, who would know? If you think about it, there's a circuit breaker, right, in place. And if you turn everything on in your home at the same time, it might go off, right, because of the excess amount of load, I guess. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think that's probably it. Hopefully, this is an event we're all prepared to. We are all prepared for thanks to the storm drills. So these are drills they are actually doing for storm exercises, right? Apparently, they have been doing some sort of these kind of event where an entire data center will go down, but they never expected the entire not a region. Yeah. Data center, yeah, but entire global network, they never did. But it actually helped them. In a storm exercise, we simulate a major system failure by taking a device, a service, data center, or an entire region offline. Stressing testing all the infrastructure involved. Experience from these drills gave us the confidence and experience to bring these back online, carefully manage the increasing load. In the end, our services came back relatively quickly without any further system-wide failures. And while we'd never previously ran a storm that simulated a global backbone failure, we'll certainly be looking for a way to simulate events in the future. Every failure like this is an opportunity to learn and get better. And there is plenty for us to learn. We did learn a lot. Thank you, Facebook. And kudos for all the engineers in this situation because, man, this must have been very, very stressful to get up and running. After every issue, small and large, we do an extensive review process to understand how we can make our systems resilient. That process is already underway. We've done extensive work hardening our system to prevent unauthorized access. And it was interesting to see how that hardening slowed us down as we tried to recover from an outage caused not by malicious activity, but an error on our own making. I believe a trade-off like this is worth it. Greatly increased day-to-day security versus a slower recovery from a hopefully rare event like this. From here on out, our job is to strengthen our testing drills and overall resilience to make sure events like this happen as rarely as possible. 15,000 likes. All right, guys, what do you think? This wasn't a very interesting outage, to be honest. Unlike the fact that the first hour of the outage, I thought it was just a boring DNS issue, but no, it was turned out to be more than just that. Again, I had a lot of questions that are basically remain unanswered for now, as you watched and listened in this podcast. But yeah, we'll keep learning, I guess, from our mistakes. What do you think about this outage? Let me know in the comment section below. I'm going to see you in the next one. You guys stay awesome. Goodbye.